Okay, good afternoon, everyone. Today is August 31st, 2016, and we are here at United Orthodox Synagogues for our weekly lunch and learn on Parshat HaShavua. And today we look at Parshat Re'eh, and we're going to be on page 408 in the Tanakh, which is chapter 15 in the book of Devarim. We're going to do two things. We're going to work on two planes today. One is we're going to look at a local question, where it seems to be that there are two verses that contradict each other. And the other is a more global issue about the question which I put in the title of the class, which is it possible for a mitzvah to be removed from the Torah, which is a purposely sort of provocative way to put it.
Why would anyone want to do that?
Well, so we'll see. I don't necessarily mean what it sounds like, I mean. So let's first start with a local question. So some background. Chapter 15 in the book of Devarim deals with the halacha of Shemitah, which is every 7 years, right, if you are a creditor, you have to remit the amount due to you, right? The debtor is free from the loan, okay? That's one of the laws of Shemitah. Besides, in the seventh year, letting the land lie fallow, all debts are forgiven. Yeah.
I have a question. What if you take out that debt that year or the year before?
Then the lender has to know that there's a chance that if he doesn't get paid back, that he's going to lose out on his loan. Correct.
Okay.
Right. So that's now this became a problem. Because people stopped loaning, the Gemara says people stopped lending people money. So that's why this rabbinic device instrument called the Heter Iska was created, which is sort of in the same school of the selling of the chametz and the selling of the land for Shemitah. It allows the Beit Din to collect those debts on behalf, really, of the person, which is permitted, as opposed to the person collecting them themselves. But the bottom line is, this is the way it's supposed to be. Every 7 years, the loans are forgiven. And so, why was this instituted? This type of relief, why was it instituted? So it's very clear, the Pasuk says, in Pasuk number 4, Efes ki lo yebecha evyon, I'm sorry, let's back up. Every seventh year, chapter 15, verse 1, every seventh year you shall practice remission of debts. This shall be the nature of the remission. Every creditor shall remit the due that he claims from his fellow. He shall not dun his fellow or kinsman, for the remission proclaimed is of the Lord. You may dun the foreigner, but you must remit whatever is due from your kinsman. This halacha only applies to fellow Jews. However, then the pasuk says, Efes ki lo ye becha evyon, but you should know that there will be no needy among you, since God's going to bless you. Meaning it's almost as if suggesting that this part of Shemitah is theoretical, because there's not going to be anyone who's needy. And if there's not going to be anyone who's needy, then there's not going to be anyone who requires a loan, right? It's different. You know, you have to think about it. We in a modern economy, loans are not for the poor. The truth is, in the modern economy, loans are for the rich, right? Because only rich people can afford to pay back a loan with the interest. But in this period of time, loans were for the poor. If you didn't have enough money to cover your basic needs, you borrowed money.
What if you borrow for a house? You don't have to be poor. I mean, a person borrows for a house.
It's a mortgage.
But I'm saying, I don't think they had those type of economic devices in the time of the Chumash. I mean, I don't think they were dealing with mortgages and things like that. They were dealing with loans to cover basic needs. But the Chumash says, but don't worry, because there's not going to be any poor people, and this is all theoretical. Great, that's a wonderful vision. However, if we turn now to the towards a few psukim later, verse 11. We have a problem. Verse 11 says, "Ki lo yechdal evyon mikerav haaretz." Page 409. For there will never cease to be needy ones in your land. Which is why I command you, open your hand to the poor and needy kinsmen in your land. So which one is it, God? Are the laws of Shemitah and the release of debt theoretical? Efes ki lo yeh b'cha avyon, because there's not going to be any poor people. Or, as it says in verse 11, Pasuk Yud Aleph, is the reason for all of these rules because there are always going to be poor people. I mean, it's and these are just, you know, this is, you know, one's verse 4, one's verse 11. Doesn't require knowing the entire Torah to read a couple of psukim ahead to realize that there seems to be a contradiction here.
How did they interpret what a poor person was?
That's a good question. We don't have an interpretation here about what a poor person is, but it seems poor is simply someone who needs money from an outside source other than what they have on their own.
And at those days, it was probably just for food or clothes.
Right. So any suggestions what to make of this apparent contradiction between verse 4 and verse 11? Again, verse 4, there will be no poor people because God will bless you. Verse 11, there will always be poor people, which is why you have to be nice to them.
If possible.
What about it?
There won't be any poor people if provided.
Okay, so, good. Daniel is saying what a number of the commentaries say, which is you have to read another verse. You have to read verse 5, right? Verse 5 could be read in two ways. It's translated here, if. But it's not only translated. I mean, some people see verse 5 as a standalone verse. Rakim shamar tishma b'kol Hashem lokecha shbor ala sot kol mitzvah zot, Hashem lochim mitzvah hayom, ki Hashem lokecha b'racha kasher diber lach. But many explain this to be if, meaning there are not going to be any needy people when, under what circumstances, if you do what you're supposed to do, if you follow the mitzvot. Right? If only you heed the Lord your God and take care to keep all this instruction that I enjoin upon you this day, for the Lord your God will bless you as he has promised you. You will extend loans to many nations, but require none yourself. You will dominate many nations, but they will not dominate you. Right? The Jewish people are going to become the bankers of the world. The bankers of the world, okay? or the Jewish state will become the bankers of the world. If we follow Hashem, but if not, then verse 4 is up for grabs. So how does that explain verse 11? Verse 11, but that creates a problem for verse 11. What's the problem that creates for verse 11? Daniel's probably right, that's what the commentaries say, right? That's what it means. If you do verse 5, then verse 4 will come true.
Wow, very pessimistic view.
Right, it's as if the Torah is like telling you right away, I have no faith in you. If you keep the Torah, there's going to be no poor, but don't worry. You're going to blow it. I mean, this is Moshe also giving some sort of pep talk to the Jewish people before they go into the land of Israel. What kind of encouragement is this? Right, that you're not going to make it. You're in trouble.
It's like talking to the child. First, you don't put the demand first. And, it would be nice. We'll take him out. And he's excited. And then...
Right, you burst his bubble. Now, by the way, let's turn to the source book.
No, so this way you'll be more willing probably to do good anyway, even without...
I mean, he's going to try to disprove.
Because you'll be so excited about
okay.
All the good is.
I will tell you, if you look on just flip to page 2 of the source book, which is...
on the back of page 1.
Right, coincidentally on the back of page 1. this is a commentary of Rav David Zvi Hoffman, 19th century Germany. On the bottom of page 2, on the right side, he says exactly like Daniel said. Moshe was just saying it like it is. V'halo matzinu she-Moshe Rabbeinu amar lehedya hein ba'odeni chai mamrim hayitem im Hashem v'af ki acharei moti. Ki adati acharei moti ki ashrei tashchitun. Everyone turn to chapter 31 in the book of Devarim. It's an insight into Moshe's final words to the Jewish people. 31 verse 27. So that's going to be on page 445. Anyone want to read this? You want to read this in Hebrew or English, Eddie? From 29? No? Anyone want to read this? Verse 29? Daniel?
Yeah.
Kiyadati aferei moti kiyashtei tashtitun disartem in aderet asher siviti atem vikarata atem hara'a be'aferita yamin kita asu et hara be'inei Hashem la'afiso b'masei be'ech.
That's very
right. Moshe says, I know it's going to happen. I know that when I am dead, you will act wickedly and turn away from the path that I enjoined upon you, and that in time to come, misfortune will befall you for having done evil in the sight of the Lord and vexed him by your deeds. So it's true. Moshe had a very pessimistic view. This certainly would lead us to believe that Moshe had a very pessimistic view of Bnei Yisrael's ability to do what the Torah says. And therefore, Rav David Zvi Hoffman says, back here, Al Kain, the third line after the bracket, therefore, Ein Litzmoa, Sha Torah Mitchashevet Gam Be'efsharut Shavtacha Efes Ki Lo Yebecha Avyon Lo Titkaye Miyad. Don't be surprised that this part of the verse that says there will not be any poor people will not be fulfilled. Al Kain, I mean, don't be surprised. This is really what Moshe believed.
Well, why does he say miyad though? That if the Torah is saying it will always. Right? He's kind of saying that there's eventually they'll get it right.
Right, because maybe Moshe is still, you know, Moshe can only be speaking to the generation that he knows. And he thinks that they're stubborn and pigheaded and they're not going to follow Hashem. But maybe another generation will. Right? Okay. So that is Rav David Zvi Hoffman. Explain, it's not a stira, it's not a contradiction. It's the Torah is telling you the theoretical possibility, and then it's giving you the reality of what Moshe really believed. Now, there's another way to get out of this contradiction. Go back to page one of the packet. Two other options. Where this is still David Zvi Hoffman. He says something fascinating. This is very powerful. Yesh mifarshim ki apasuk hu tzivui al tiye b'cha evyo. There shall not be a poor person amongst you. Kilomar ata chayav l'dob l'kach shelo yeh b'cha evyo. It's your responsibility to make sure there's no poor people. Kefi ha'emshech al kein ata chayav l'hachazik Biyavni. Therefore, you're obligated to strengthen the hand of the poor. So it's not, this verse here, number four, is not a promise. It's a mitzvah. Efes ki lo yebichavion. There shall be no needy among you. It's your responsibility. Now, it also is pessimistic because verse 11 says, ki lo yechdal evyon, meaning I know you're not going to fulfill it, but it's not a contradiction in what God's saying. It's still pessimistic that the Jews aren't going to fulfill their responsibility to remove poverty, but it's not God saying there'll be no poor, there will be poor. It's God saying it's your responsibility that there should be no poor, and then Moshe saying, well, I'm not so sure if you're going to pull it off. Okay? So that's another way to look at it. Now, one other way before we get to the big picture, which relates to what you said, what's the definition of poor? So go to page 3. Okay. Efes ki lo iye b'cha evyon, where the arrow is. This is from a collection of commentaries on the Torah called Moshav Zakenim, which are written by the Tosafists in the Middle Ages. Efes ki lo iye b'cha evyon. That's the pasuk 4 that we've read. Bizman she'osim ritzono shel makom. Now this is going to introduce us to the big global picture. In the time when you do God's will. V'tema im kein im lo yebecha avyon l'mi yitnu ma'aser ani. It's a big problem. Sha'arei shana gimel shel shmita hayu notnim ma'aser ani b'makom ma'aser sheni. Every year, there are certain gifts, agricultural gifts that to be given to the Kohanim, to the Leviim. The third year of every seven-year cycle, a certain amount of your produce has to be given to the poor. What if there are no poor?
Go to the Kohanim.
Who are you going to give it to?
The Kohanim. Yeah.
What's that? One with the least money. So poor becomes a relative term.
Middle class.
V'yesh lomar. Ah, so he says, here's the answer. The evyon hu ra yoter me'ani. The pasuk number 4 says, efes kilo v'cha evyon. It says needy. Needy is worse than poor. Evyon is super poor. Ani is just poor. So efes kilecha b'chavyon, he says, shehu ta'av yoter me'ani. He's more needy. Ve'evyon lo yebo tozman. It's true. This really super level of poverty, that's going to cease to exist. Aval aniyim yiyu ba'olam b'chozman. But there's always going to be the regular poor people. Ben shosim ritzono shamakom, ben sheino sim ritzono. Whether you do God's will or not, poor people always exist. Meaning the super level of poverty will cease to exist if you do God's will. But you'll always have some poor people, which is really what Elisheva said. The next people in line. The next poorest. Those are aniyim. Aniyim are always going to be evyon not. Okay? So that answers sort of, but this raises the question. He raises the question of... Let's say you don't accept this distinction between evyon and ani. Right? What happens when the object or the recipient of a mitzvah no longer exists? Like, let's say there are no poor people. Who do you give tzedakah to? Now, unfortunately, we don't have such a problem. But if all of a sudden there'd be no poor people.
There's always schools, hospitals.
That's not tzedakah. Tzedakah is for poor people. Other giving to yeshivot, and all those things are wonderful. But the mitzvah of tzedakah is to give to poor people.
Even today?
Even today, yeah. So what if there are no poor people? It's not only the question about poor people, it's a question about other mitzvah. For example, well, I'll ask you, think of an example besides, yeah, think of an example, I'm not going to tell you a besides, think of an example that no longer exists today.
Slavery?
What's the mitzvah? It's not a mitzvah to have a slave.
Well, no, but you have to release your slaves in the.
That's only if you have a slave.
Yeah, but now nobody has slaves.
Sacrifices.
Right. So that's true. There's no Beit HaMikdash. Good. That's an example. Sacrifices. Okay. Let's look at a couple of examples. A really fascinating discussion. Okay. Let's look on page 4 of the booklet. This brings us to Yom Kippur. Right before we sing Mari Cohen, everyone remember that song?
Yeah.
Right? One of the high energy moments on Yom Kippur. So right around that time, if you remember, we recall that the Kohen who came out of the Kodesh HaKadashim says a prayer for the Jewish people. We read it in English, if you remember. So the source for this prayer is the Gemara, Masechet Yoma. You see the bracket on page 4, Umit Palel Tflak Tzara B'Bayit HaChitzon, everyone see it?
Yeah.
The Mishnah taught and the high priest recites a brief prayer in the outer chamber. My Matzleh. Okay, what does he say? Rava bar Rav Ada, V'Ravin bar Rav Ada, Tarvayu Mishmei de Rav Amri. Rava bar Rav Ada and Ravina, in the name of Rav Ada, they both said in the name of Rav. Yehi Ratzom Mufanecha Hashem Elokeinu Shetehe Shana Zo Gishuma Ushchuna. May this year be rainy and hot. Shchuna ma'aliyata hi. Is heat good? It's a good Houston question. Right? Why would you pray for a hot year? Ela ema im shchuna tegeshuma. Really what we mean is if it's going to be hot, at least let it also rain so that the crops don't die. That's one of the examples. That's one opinion of what the tefillah is. Rav Acha berei derava misayim ba mishmei derav Yehuda. Rav Acha, son of Rava, concluded the language of the prayer in the name of Rav Yehuda, that says, Lo ya'adei oved sholton midebet Yehuda. May the rule of power not depart from the house of Judah.
V'lo yehiyu amcha Yisrael trichin lefarnes ze mizeh. And may your nation of Israel not depend on each other for sustenance. Rather, they should be sustained from the produce of their land. That's a beautiful tefillah, right? The challenge, now the question is, be careful what you pray for, because you may get it. Whom are we supposed to give tzedakah to then? How do I fulfill the mitzvah of giving tzedakah? This is the question that the Moshav Zakenim was dealing with about Maser Sheni. Right? If there are no poor people, Maser Aniyam mean. If there are no poor people, every third year of the Shemitah cycle, who am I supposed to give the crops to? And if the Kohen Gadol's prayer is answered, that the nation of Israel not depend on each other for sustenance, and there are no poor people, how am I supposed to fulfill the mitzvah of tzedakah? Meaning, this is what I provocatively alluded to in the topic of the class. Is it possible to take a mitzvah out of the Torah?
Oh.
Right? Is it possible that circumstances would lead us to the reality that a mitzvah simply doesn't exist anymore? The Rambam was worried about this. We'll get to it in a second. Yes?
Is a mitzvah given to a poor person only Jewish or is it anybody poor?
I'd say it's two mitzvot, but this one we're talking about giving to a poor person.
So anybody poor, nothing to do with it.
I'm sorry, there's Jewish and non-Jewish. We're talking about the Jewish aspect.
So,
Rabbi, there's always temporary poorness, like if a family has a tragedy and then temporarily need...
Great, so that's true, but the only people are going to be able to take care of that going to be the locals. But you're living here in Houston and someone's house burns down in Kansas. So the Kansas Jewish community is going to take care of them. But there are no poor people left in Houston. What are you supposed to do? There are no poor people left in the world, except for an occasional, you're right, emergency.
So, why is it when you have an appeal in a shul, if you're making the appeal to the shul or to the yeshiva in the community, it's not giving tzedakah, why doesn't the shul set up an appeal to give to poor, may it be in the community or outside the community?
We have my discretionary fund essentially is for that. And we have a mechanism for that. And it's a very giving tzedakah is a very complicated halachic matter as opposed to in terms of what counts as tzedakah and what doesn't count as tzedakah. Not every charitable gift that we give counts as tzedakah. But let's see what the Rambam said here, because the stakes are very high. What are the stakes here? The stakes are as follows. According to the Rambam, I'll just read you the Rambam's words. According to the Rambam, right? In his introduction to his commentary on Masechet Sanhedrin, he says as follows: Ha'omer shehabore hichlif mitzvah zo b'mitzvah acheret, ukvar batla Torah zo kofer b'Torah. The person says God exchanged one mitzvah for another, or that this mitzvah is nullified, is a heretic. So what am I supposed to do with the mitzvah of bringing karbanot? Doesn't exist anymore. Am I a heretic if I say that? Or what about this mitzvah? Right? So let's see. You want to say something, Daniel?
No, I just didn't understand the analogy with the Masechet Yonah. What were they getting rid of?
I mean, let's say the prayer comes true. The prayer that there should be no more poverty. So let's say his prayer is answered. And all of a sudden, there's no poor people. How are we supposed to fulfill the mitzvah of tzedakah? And do we say that the mitzvah of tzedakah, not really how we're supposed to fulfill the mitzvah of tzedakah, does the mitzvah of tzedakah exist anymore? And if it doesn't exist anymore, am I a heretic by saying that there's a mitzvah that God gave us in the Torah doesn't exist anymore? So the Rambam was concerned about this, and he wrote about this in his Sefer HaMitzvot on page 6 of your source book. He says as follows. This is the mitzvah. There's another example. To kill the seven nations and to destroy Amalek. So we don't know who Amalek is anymore. Does that, so now the mitzvah doesn't exist anymore.
Symbolic.
Am I a heretic? Am I a heretic? Symbolism, nice, but does the mitzvah exist or does the mitzvah not exist? Okay, so the Rambam says, where I bracketed, and lest one think that this mitzvah is one that does not obtain for all the generations, since the seven nations have already been exterminated. The only one who will think so is one who does not understand the concept of obtaining for generations and not obtaining for generations. Meaning you're going to say, God gave us a mitzvah in the Torah to destroy the seven nations. That mitzvah is temporary. Why? Because they're gone. So God must have given us a mitzvah that's not l'dorot, that's not for generations, which the Rambam says is a heretical position. The Torah always is in force. So the Rambam says this is just a misunderstanding of what it means. If a certain end has been attained, and that end not linked to a particular time, this is not called not obtaining for generations. For it does obtain for all these generations in which the attainment of the end is possible. It doesn't mean that the mitzvah doesn't exist for all generations. If you can fulfill the mitzvah, great. All the time, anytime. But if practically speaking you can't fulfill the mitzvah, it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. The mitzvah is still there, but you just practically speaking can't do it. Here he gives an example. If the Lord entirely destroyed and exterminated the seed of Amalek, would we then say that the mitzvah of you shall wipe up the remembrance of Amalek does not obtain for generations? Certainly not. It obtained in all generations. Whenever the seed of Amalek is found, this will be exterminated. In the same way, the slaying of the people of the seven nations and their annihilation is a perpetual command unto us, a war of mitzvah, a milchemet mitzvah. We are commanded to root them out and pursue them relentlessly in every generation. And this is what we indeed did until their extermination was completed by David, etc. Okay, so if you flip to the bottom, last three lines, for sometimes the mitzvah obtains for the generations, although the object of the mitzvah may have gone out of existence in a certain generation. The mitzvah is not thereby transformed to one that does not obtain for the generations, but the opposite would make it not obtain for generations. That is, if a certain thing in a certain condition were bound by a particular act or law at a certain time and is not bound by it today, though it be the same condition, such as a supernatural, a superannuated Levite, one over 50, who was ruled unfit for Levitical service in the desert, but is ruled fit today, as explained in place, etc., then this renders the mitzvah not of him generations, understand this principle, and know it. Meaning, there are certain things that God said in the Chumash, which are specifically for the Dor HaMidbar, for that generation, but otherwise, the mitzvot are binding on all generations. And the fact that, practically speaking, you can't do it, that's not to say that the mitzvah no longer exists. That's heretical. To say that the mitzvah can no longer be performed for technical reasons, we have no Beit HaMikdash, we can't identify anyone of Amalek, and the seven nations have already gone, okay. That's just a technical problem. It doesn't mean the requirement sort of doesn't conceptually still exist. So if we were to achieve that time in history when there are no poor people, we wouldn't say that the mitzvah no longer exists. We would say, of course the mitzvah of tzedakah exists. It just happens to be that, technically speaking, we're unable to fulfill it because we can't find any poor people. But it doesn't mean the mitzvah doesn't exist. So, I want to show you, just show you two more things from the Rambam and Rav Nachum Rabinovich. The Rambam has a section in his book called Matanot Aniyim, all the halachot of tzedakah. Okay? And in the first chapter, the 10th halacha, you don't have this, he says as follows. Ne'mar b'matanot aniyim. It says regarding gifts to the poor. La'ani v'la'ger tazovotam kol zaman shaniyim tovinotam. There are certain parts of the field, when you go collect them, you're supposed to leave them for the poor. Shichacha, leket, peya, certain things, supposed to, you forget them, a certain corner of the field, supposed to leave them. Then the Rambam comes to our question. What if there are no poor people? Pasku ha'aniyim levakesh ulechazer alehen. Let's say the poor people stop coming. You have a field, and you leave every time you harvest, you leave, you're supposed to leave, and no one's coming for it. Hare ha'nishar mehen mutar l'chol adam. Then anyone can come get it. She'ein gufo kadosh kitrumot ve'eino chayav liten lehem demehen shelo ne'mar behen. The actual stuff is not holy, like truma, that has to go to the Kohanim, right? If there are poor people, it's for them. If not, anyone could get it. Ela tazovotam ve'eno mitzuveh la'azovotam l'chayav la'ofot ela aniyim. The Torah says leave it, but not for the birds of prey who are going to come and take it if there are no poor people. It says leave it for the poor people. If there are none, take it. Varei ein aniyim. And if there are no poor people, come take it yourself. So here we have an example. The Rambam recognizes the possibility. Maybe not globally, but maybe in a certain area. You have to remember, it's very easy for us to find poor people. You go online, you make an online contribution to an organization that gives money to the poor people. But you know, you're living in the Galil in the time of the Talmud, and you're harvesting your field, and there are no poor people. What are you supposed to do? You're going to get on a buggy and go look for poor people in Yerushalayim? Right? I don't think so. Take it. I'm not sure how much time has to pass, but if there are no poor people...
Who takes it?
Anyone could take it. You could go take it. The owner could go take it. Anyone could take it. It says, Mutar l'chol adam. Anyone's allowed to take it.
But the owner has no right to tell them, no, it's not for you, and he wants to get the profit. Is
right.
Allowed to do
he'll go the day before.
Meaning other people or poor people?
No, the other people that come from the leftovers.
That's a good question. It says l'chol adam. The footnote says here, kanireshe kavanah shemutar gam lebal hasadeh, also to the owner, but presumably to anyone. Meaning my neighbor who's not poor could say, hey, no poor people today. I'm going to go snatch a sheave of, a bundle of wheat. It's a really good question. Meaning,
he's allowed to tell them no?
I don't know. I'm not sure. That's a good question. But the bottom line is, by the way, he says, at what point is this now a free-for-all? And meaning, even if you're not poor, are you allowed to take it? He says, "Mishayich yikansu hamelaktim hashniim vilaktu acher hamelaktim harishonim v'yetzu." Meaning, this: the first group comes, and the second group comes, and no one else has come. I mean, there's a certain calculation you make of when it's allowed to all for people. If the normal time period of these two groups pass and no one's taken it, it's a free for all. So mutar l'chol adam. So
you actually never can tell because some people don't like to publicize that they are in stress
but
no, we're not talking about giving tzedakah. This is about leaving and the poor people coming to get it. But my point is that the Rambam addresses the possibility. Well, he says pasku aniyim, which could mean they stopped coming. But it could also mean they're just not there. There are none. Now, one other thing from Rav Rabinovich. This is really interesting. He says, he's the Rosh Yeshiva at Birkat Moshe, and he says as follows. V'hinei af she'adayin rechokim anu matzav shel osim ritzano shel makom. Ad shetitkayim banu haftacha ki lo yiecha ba'evyon. Even though we're very far from the realization that everyone's going to do God's will, and therefore there'll be no poor people, right? He's talking about Israel. He says, but nonetheless, we have already succeeded or merited in our independent country. We've come to a point, we've taken steps with God's help, that even the people who are poor, even the people who are needy are not poor. Right, remember we said there's differences. They're neither not poor. Ad kadeshi yirtzu latzeit el hasadot la'asof matanot aniyim. Right, we don't have people who are so poor that they have to go into a field and take stuff. Mimela kiyom leket shichu pea mutarim l'chol adam. Therefore, Rabinovitz says nowadays it seems that we've reached this position of the Rambam that because of the social services, safety net that exists in Israel, there are no people who don't have food, and so therefore, all the stuff that the farmers leave is free for everyone. Hoil ve'eno mitzaveh la'azov otam l'chayel ofot el aniyim or ein aniyim, quotes the Rambam, because as we said, you're not obligated to leave it to rot, or for the animals of the field, or for the birds to come take it. So that's interesting. He's saying that the better the social. What he seems to be indicating is, we can get to a time, right? If a government does, if a society does things they're supposed to do, you could actually achieve a time where there are no poor people to this degree, meaning that they need to go into a field to take their. There are poor people, but are they so poor they have no food except for what they could find by going into someone else's field? So these psukim raise the issue. Efes kilo yevchev yon. What a society could look like without poor people. And again, what are the, I guess, theological or religious ramifications of saying that a mitzvah no longer exists? Yes.
So is it fulfilling mitzvah even if those people that come and collect it are not desperately? I mean, from his point of view, am I doing a mitzvah by?
Right. So if you don't know, if you don't know that a person is fooling, is faking, and you give, then you fulfill the mitzvah. But if you know that someone's not poor. No, it's a good question.
You know, near my sister's house was a pardes in Israel, and the owner used to say, please come and take anything that's fallen off the trees. Please don't pick the fruit of the tree.
Well, that wasn't only to the poor.
He didn't want it to go to waste. So he said, I mean, if we wanted a lemon, my sister said to her son, go down and get a lemon. You know,
so here's just one other interesting thing from one of the other commentaries in trying to figure out, you know, is there an internal inconsistency or contradiction between one verse that says there won't be poor people, another verse that says there'll always be poor people. So one of the commentaries called the Chizkuni has an interesting solution to this problem. Ki lo yechdal evyon. The verse that we verse number 11, key,
because.
Normally means because there will not be poor people. He says the word key can mean four different things in the Torah. It's another way to deal with this apparent contradiction. I'll read it to you. V'lemala shekatav bo efes ki lo yechav evyon. But above we have a verse that says there are going to be no poor people. So he wants to know what's going on. Al tenaihu omer. So his first answer is it's a condition, like Daniel pointed out. If you do the mitzvot, there'll be no poor people. Otherwise, there will be. Ki lo yechav evyon. Rak im shema tishma. V'kan shehu omer ki lo yechdal evyon. But here in verse 11, when it says, because there will always be poor people, lashon shema hu. Ki doesn't mean that there will be. Ki means maybe. Or if. V'parsha zo yesh arba ki. In this small collection of verses, the word ki appears four times. Mishamshin bidal lashonot, and means four things. Ki yebecha evyon lashon im. One time it means if. Ki patoach tiftach means ella, means rather, meaning you should. Open your hands. Ki biglal hadavar hazeh lashon deha, because of. And ki lo yechdal evyon, the one that's causing us trouble, lashon shemahu. Shema lo takshiru ma'aseichem b'chol atzorech. Maybe you won't do everything that God says, and therefore there'll be poor people. Which takes away the negativity that we talked about. But now this is a very important commentary, because now it's telling us that every time you read the Torah and the word ki, you have to figure out which of the four possible meanings of ki it could mean. You may want to, you know, photocopy this and keep this in your wallet, right? So you know, key doesn't mean it will happen.
Maybe.
It's going, right? It might happen.
If.
So that's how he deals with it. Key means four things here. And the last one that causes trouble means maybe, which takes away two things. It removes the contradiction and removes the negativity of the, we were able to move the contradiction by simply saying it's conditional. But if ki means because, then it's very negative. But if ki means maybe, then it's not so negative. And that's how the Chizkuni comes to a more complete solution to both of those problems. Okay, everyone, that's it for the day.
The name of him is Chizkuni.
Chizkuni.